Today we're going to learn a concept called zero-day call options give you time. This is going to be a deep dive into Soros reflexivity. If you guys don't know, I made a website a while ago now that is called Wyandanche Library. It's pretty great, has some good studies. It should start you off. People have asked me too many times, how do they get started in finance? Start reading, man. Start poking around. You have to have a base level of understanding before you can be ready for mentors, quite frankly. The Alchemy of Finance by Soros is a book that came out in 1987, and it introduces an idea called reflexivity. Reflexivity is the idea that there's a two-way feedback loop between participants' thinking and situations in which they participate. In classical economic theory, market prices process information and converge on equilibrium prices that accurately reflect underlying fundamentals. Soros argues the opposite. Market participants' biased perceptions actively shape the fundamentals. So the idea of this is a stock price goes up, the fundamentals improve. The way I have internalized this is Palantir. Okay, you have Palantir. Palantir's stock goes up, people say there must be something about their technology, so they get more business. And because they get more business, their growth rate, they can model that out more, and more people buy the stock. That is the way that I understand this concept. There's two functions, cognitive and manipulative. Reflexivity begins with a distinction between two relationships that participants have with the world. The cognitive function, the ability to understand reality, to form an accurate picture of what is happening, and the manipulative function, sometimes called the participating function, is the attempt to change reality, to act on the world and reshape it according to one's intentions or interests. Today, the call of action is going to be the manipulative function. Why equilibrium theory is wrong. The dominant framework in markets in general, and this was especially true in the 80s, was that there's efficiencies, you need insider information. They usually would go to the loose framework for the efficient market hypothesis because there was a shit ton of insider trading in the 80s. This book came out in 1987 before the crash, I believe. And that was the peak Gordon Gekko, Wall Street, you know, Blue Horseshoe is taking out Anaconda Steel. The boom bust model. And this doesn't start from nothing, okay? It starts from an underlying trend, some genuine change in fundamentals. Technology, you know, could be some sort of cycle, and a prevailing bias reinforces that trend. So the example might be AI. You know, people have had 10 years from 2010 to 2021 of tech just super outperforming and basically the mega caps eating the world. And then AI comes and people have a bias that that's just the way things go. The bias is not yet recognized as a bias, right? People, you know, in tech investing, I don't mean to beat up on tech. We'll talk about private credit is that tech can have outsized growth in aggregate over the course, you know, of decades, that is compounding in excess of the 10% return of the S&P. But it's not yet recognized as a bias. You know, at some point, there's a growing divergent from fundamentals. That's the next step. So you might see the price of, you know, NFL sports teams go up. And those NFL sports teams, you look at 10 times revenue and basically zero operating income. And you're like, where are the fundamentals to justify that? And then a PE guy will come in and say, well, we can have, you know, media rights and we can build out restaurants and we can do gaming. We can have a little mini casino and this partnership. And that's how the model makes it work. Increasingly, that grows. Then there's a moment of truth. Something, it can be almost anything, causes market participants to recognize the divergence. The bias is tested and found wanting. The self-reinforcing process stalls. Sounds like what we're experiencing with private credit. You know, underwriting businesses at 9x leverage on EBITDA, which is fake earnings, free cash flow conversion, that could be, you know, 12 to 15 times. So, you know, if you would, these guys say 40% of the enterprise value's debt, the enterprise value is too high. So they're putting too much debt on it. It's all debt. And then the reversal and the self-reinforcing decline. So when people are talking about pro-cyclicality, it's when stocks go up, people want to buy them. When stocks go down, people want to sell them. When asset classes are doing well, people want more. When they're doing bad, people want less. And generally, you know, you see these redemptions in these BDCs, self-reinforcing. The more redemptions, the more negative news, the more redemptions, very simply put. Reflexivity rests on a deeper philosophical foundation that Soros calls fallibility. Our understanding of the world is incomplete and usually distorted. We operate with imperfect models, biased perceptions, and limited information. In natural science, these limitations can be overcome through controlled experiments and the accumulation of evidence. Not so in economics. Not so in any social science. In the book, Soros draws an analogy to Heisenberg's uncertainty principle in quantum physics. The act of observation disturbs the phenomenon of being that's being observed. Same is true with, you know, any edge someone might have in trading. It's like, you know, this might be a corollary, but as soon as someone talks about an edge, it's gone. Right? Maybe not immediately, but someone else figures out, okay, how do I implement that edge? That edge goes to nothing. And that's why there's swings, you know? There's swings. And baseball, for a while, it was you wanted to get a lot of swing and misses and go north-south. Then hitters adjust, and you start going east-west. Sure, there might be improval over time, but the quadrants of improval rotate. And the same thing happened in poker, where people played perfect game theory in order to beat, you know, the money makers of the world. Then all of a sudden, everyone's playing perfect game theory. They're betting perfectly. And people came in and said, okay, I want to understand the exact statistics. I don't want to not know the math, but I want to use that to understand what my opponent has. And when you understand what your opponent has, you can beat them. It's sort of not, it's not perfect in a vacuum, what you're betting, but you have an idea, you have information. That's the bet size of the other person. You're not trying to read their face and their facial expressions, they'll fuck you up. If you know that they're betting 3% pot, that means this on the turn. It's like, okay, he doesn't have a great hand. I know what I have. So you overbet, even though the odds in a vacuum might not be that good, you know you're going to take the pot. Real-time experiment. So basically what this comes down to is, you know, there's a quote. Soros says, when I see a bubble, I get excited and I want to rush in and I want to buy. And the reason why I'm making this video now is because we're going through a time in the market where, shit, you guys know all the risks that I've talked about. I mean, realistically, look at this chart. That looks pretty fucking stupid, right? It looks pretty fucking stupid. And then, you know, we have apparently Iran's bombing boats. It's like, I made a funny video, like, turn your brain off if it's not making you money. You know, I know a lot of smart people that are getting fucked up by this market. You know, you break up below the 200 day and, you know, there's no reason to be bullish, then all of a sudden you have 13 days in a row, green, green, green. On Monday, I'm sure we're gonna get some fucking stupid pump. Excuse my language, although not really. What do you think the market's gonna do? You think it's gonna go down because it shouldn't be up here? Or you think it's gonna go higher? You know, if you want the market to go down, the best way to do it, try to manipulate the outcome. You know, I don't think any of us have big enough portfolio sizes to actually do that. But in aggregate, the idea is the same. You want to make money in this end stage if you think it's a bubble. I think it's a bubble. I certainly think it's a bubble. In equities, you get the chance to get in and get out pretty quickly with good leverage as someone who's a retail trader. What I want to highlight now is reflexivity in credit markets, where this is most powerful and most dangerous. The mechanism is straightforward. Banks lend against collateral. The value of the collateral depends on the market prices. Market prices depend on the part of the volatility of credit. More lending pushes up the collateral values, which enables more lending, which pushes up the collateral values further. Now, the banking system, I don't see as the issue anymore. But this applies to shadow banks. This applies to shadow banks. You know, when they have NAVs and they're pushing up the NAVs, and all of a sudden they're borrowing against the NAVs, it's all the same thing. Deploying more capital, because they're deploying more capital, cost of capital is lower again and again. 2008 was a great example. And remember, a lot of people were squeezed for a long time in 2008. 2007 to 2008. Burry managed to be squeezed for 3 years. You don't want to be squeezed for 3 years. Why this matters. Reflexivity is not a theory about financial markets. It is a theory about how human beings interact with the systems they inhabit and how those interactions make social systems fundamentally different from natural systems. For investors, the practical implications are profound. If prices affect fundamentals, then buying low based on intrinsic value can fail catastrophically when failing prices damage the business itself. This is like the opposite of Ben Graham. I don't think there's 100% truth to this, but there's a reason why I'm exposing people to this today. I don't think that this is necessarily academic. It's kind of just a counterpoint to the prevailing thoughts that dominated a lot of investment ideas prior. And I think it's really useful. I think it's really useful to understand might be in a bubble. Bubble ends fastest if it goes up more, faster, starts accelerating. And when that parabola breaks, you know what a parabola is? You remember in math class? When that parabola breaks, that's the end. That's when you de-risk. Now, don't be stupid. Don't be stupid. You know, people are coming into this trading with different ideas of the way that things go. Be able to turn your mentality. If, you know, you think it's a blow off top and it's not a blow off top. All right, it's not a blow off top. Don't lose too much money. Don't lose too much money. And then ideally, you know, you can make a good amount of money this way because these moves are just explosive and stupid. You don't really need to rationalize it. And then you're going to start, and what you can't do is be sucked into the idea that, because prices are going up, that means things are good. Has nothing to do with it. Prices going up is making the narrative good. Now, to be a sigma, as the TikTok youth would say, you can just say, be like, prices going up means prices are going up. It means I got to make money. That's it. That's the lesson for the day. Peace.